In June 2011, 54 American and international visitandines came together in St. Louis, Missouri, to celebrate the 400th anniversary of the Order of the Visitation of Holy Mary. For more information about the Order of the Visitation of Holy Mary, go to visitationspirit.org. The following talk is Disseminators of the Wealth of Christ's Heart by a Visitation Sister from Tyringham, Massachusetts.
Dear sisters and dear friends of our sisters, I would like to begin my presentation with a question. Have you ever experienced a deep interior conviction welling up inside of you that will not go away? Let me repeat that. Have you ever experienced a deep interior conviction welling up inside of you that will not go away? Something like an electric current that someone has switched on that enlightens your consciousness and that will not be ignored or dispelled whatever you do. St. Francis de Sales must have had an experience like this when he wrote to St. Jane, God means us for something great. You can be sure of that. Or when he wrote to Jacqueline Favre, this humble little institute will be blessed beyond all human calculation. These words that pointed to such an illustrious future for St. Francis's humble little institute find their greatest realization, I believe, in the life of our dear sister, St. Margaret Mary. By God's designs, she was to be the chosen instrument to shape the Church's characteristic form of devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus, a devotion that Jesuit author Carl Moell calls the greatest Catholic devotion. For each of us here, called as we are to be daughters or close associates of St. Francis de Sales and St. Jane de Chantal, and spiritual sisters of St. Margaret Mary, we have been entrusted with a marvelous mission. We are the inheritors of an enormous spiritual legacy, whether we are aware of it or not. When each of us received a call to the Visitation Order, or became friends and benefactors of it, spiritual riches beyond compare were placed at our disposal. And with them, a tremendous responsibility to be the distributors of a spiritual currency that can transform lives and open doors to one's eternal salvation. There is no greater work that we could possibly be called to accomplish than to be disseminators of the wealth of Christ's heart. In order to understand our mission to spread the devotion to the Sacred Heart given us through St. Margaret Mary a little better, I would like to probe into some salient features of her life. Although we tend to view our saintly sister on a pedestal high above our own spiritual level, at least I do, a careful reading of her autobiography portrays her common humanity with us. At about age 14, Margaret Mary was cured by the Blessed Virgin from a serious illness that took away her ability to walk for 4 years. She recalls her feelings afterward by writing, At the first thrill of physical well-being, I fell in love with worldly things, persuading myself that the tenderness mother and my brother showed me gave me a free hand to fasten on all my little treats and enjoy myself to my heart's content. She admits that she was naturally fond of pleasure and that she simply wanted to please herself. Here we sense a person so utterly like ourselves, one who is attracted to the good things in life and allows her human nature to have its way. On the inside, however, there was a frightful struggle taking place in Margaret Mary's soul. Sanctity did not come easily to her. There was a tremendous tug of war occurring between the natural lightheartedness of Margaret Mary's spirit and the divine call. She admits quite plainly, "Your plans for me were very different from mine." If it seems that the Lord was hard on her at times and overly demanding, it was to prepare her for the exceptional graces she was to receive. Wiggling mightily in the hand of her God, she declares, "I had to be roped and dragged, it would seem, until I'd no choice but to follow him." Even after repeated reproofs by her divine pursuer, she says, "Straight back to my frivolities I'd go after that, and continue being difficult exactly as before." Yet, despite these barriers that Margaret Mary's human nature set up against God's grace, God perceived the noble heart of our sister and that interior disposition that would give its all and become the beloved disciple of Christ's Sacred Heart. These inborn tendencies of our sister seem so foreign to the towering spiritual character that Saint Margaret Mary was to become. Grace was at work in her independently of her own efforts, compelling her to return love for love. Her generous heart leaped to respond to the Lord in such a dramatic way that we are often put off by its exuberance. We hear those familiar longings of hers that make us begin to wonder if she really is of the same flesh and blood as we are. She writes, "There was no satisfying my hunger for humiliations and mortifications, despite the fact that with my sensitive nature, I felt them keenly." Margaret Mary awes us because she is the example par excellence of a soul that goes against the grain of human self-exaltation and self-gratification. We can only intuit from afar the spiritual jolt she must have been to the Paray community. The discerning eyes of the community were upon her, and some were not liking what they were saying. Extraordinary ways, obviously not suited to the visitation spirit. Different. Singular, suspect. It was not surprising that the level-headed ones of the community would voice their concerns. To placate their objections, the Lord made our sister into a model of obedience and humility. "Let them do just what they like with you," he reassured her. "I can easily find ways, often seemingly the most unorthodox and least likely, of making my plans come true." Divine assurance or not, it must have been a heartache for our saint to realize that her profession would not take place at the usual time. Therefore, August 25th, 1672, passed without any call to vows. Those in the know, as her process of 1715 records, remarked on her virtues, but feared what Margaret Mary's extraordinary ways would mean for her community. What kind of impact would such a person, who obviously stood out from the others, have on the community's regular life? Therefore, they hesitated. But at last, on November 6, 1672, Margaret Mary pronounced her holy vows. Reluctant in her autobiography to share the profound ecstasy of that day, she simply described her interior state as transfigured and one of inner radiance. From that time on, she discloses, the Lord favored her with his presence in an entirely new way. Now she began vividly to see and feel him near to her, to hear his voice. At about this time, Margaret Mary, now aged 26, was to experience what became known as the first great revelation of the Sacred Heart, dated December 27, 1673. In it, as you recall, the Lord expresses his passionate love for the human race, and for Margaret Mary in particular. The burning charity of Christ's heart cannot be contained any longer. It must burst forth upon Margaret Mary and through her to others. Through her to others. So that the precious treasures and graces of sanctification and salvation contained within it can drench human hearts. Sometime afterward, in 1674, our saint experienced another major revelation from the Sacred Heart. Some authors say there were two. In the autobiography, it's unclear about the date or dates these occurred. Exposing his heart to Margaret Mary as a flaming furnace of love, the Lord laments that the extravagance of his love is met with ingratitude and indifference, and calls on our holy sister to make up for this as much as she can. She is to receive communion as often as possible, to communicate especially on the first Friday of the month, and to make a holy hour each Thursday night in union with his agony and to beg mercy for sinners. The effects of these magnificent manifestations of God's love left our little sister in a sorry state physically. "I lost consciousness for the entire duration of the vision, and when they came to take me away, I had no idea where I was. As they couldn't get any answers out of me, and as I had the greatest difficulty standing on my feet, they took me to Mother." What was a superior to do? Mother Dessa Mays, superior since June 1672, was not sure what to think about this unusual religious. Margaret Mary states that she tried every way she knew to mortify and humiliate me. Perhaps this was Mother Dessa Mays' attempt to bring our saint back down to earth, like throwing cold water in her face. She was just not sure what to make of Margaret Mary and needed to test her virtue to see if this was really from God. We know that Mother Dessa Mays consulted some learned men whom she asked to interview our sister. One of them, Father Pierre Papon, whose disposition was more of the blunt and assertive type, was the superior of the Parade Jesuits, but was awaiting a new assignment. He consequently informed his provincial, Father de la Chaise, of the difficulties that his successor would have to deal with in Parade. But because of previous consultations, Margaret Mary's case had become the talk of the town. This delicate situation required a man of great prudence and discernment who knew the inner workings of souls. Father La Chaise was well acquainted with Claude La Colombière and must have thought, this is just the man for the job. When Claude arrived in Parade in February 1675, Margaret Mary, who had been given spectacular graces from the Lord, was tormented by severe doubts and anxieties. But Claude, the faithful servant and perfect friend of the Lord, was to use his spiritual expertise to sift through our saint's mystical experiences and to place his seal of approval on them. A few months after his transfer to Parade, Margaret Mary received from the Lord the great revelation. We are well acquainted with it. In June 1675, while kneeling before the Blessed Sacrament, she was deluged with God's loving presence. Behold this heart, which has so loved, which has spared nothing, exhausting and consuming itself to testify its love. In anguished tones, the Lord bemoans that the greater part of humanity has rejected his love and treats his sacrament of love with coldness and contempt. Even hearts consecrated to him are guilty. To make up for these offenses, he asks for a feast to honor his heart set aside on the Friday after Corpus Christi. On that day, the Lord explains, "You will receive me in Holy Communion and make a solemn act of reparation for the indignities I have received in the Blessed Sacrament while exposed on the altars of the world." Claude was to continue encouraging Margaret Mary despite the ridicule he received from his involvement with our sister, whom some, even in her own community, regarded as a visionary, or worse yet, deceived by evil spirits. His short stay in Parade, a mere 18 months at that time, nevertheless vastly reassured our saint and enlightened Mother Dessa Mays on the authenticity of these revelations. It is quite interesting to note that there is a lapse of nearly 9 years' time in the autobiography from where Margaret Mary informs us about Claude's departure from Paray in August 1676, and her first small but significant public homage to Christ's heart in the novitiate with her novices on July 20th, 1685. Bridging this gap, she tells us, "So far, I had found no way of fostering devotion to the Sacred Heart, which was all I lived for. Most of these years, from May 1678 to May 1684, Mother Graffier was superior. Rigorous and exact in nature, she found that the Paray community was very much divided in its sentiments toward Margaret Mary, and so subjected her to new examinations to verify the nature of her extraordinary ways." This abbreviated look at the life of Saint Margaret Mary should assure us of the fact that our sister had much to suffer for the Sacred Heart and many obstacles to overcome before she could spread the messages given her to others. The last 4 or 5 years of her life did provide some providential openings for the dissemination of this devotion. Mother Decimes, with whom she conducted an extensive correspondence, became a fervent disciple of the Sacred Heart and did her best as superior of Moulin to instill a love for the Sacred Heart in this community. Priests and people outside the visitation became interested and involved in spreading the messages. Little by little, hearts were melted in the Paray Monastery and in the Paray municipal community at large, including Margaret Mary's own family, and there was more of a willingness to offer homage to the Sacred Heart and concretely respond to his request made through our saint. Still, enormous hurdles had to be surmounted in the future, but these are a subject for another talk or talks. What about us? As spiritual kin of Saint Margaret Mary, we want to pass on these messages of Christ's love. How do we do that? Basically, I think you'll agree that the greater our love, the deeper our prayer, the more faithful our living, the more self-sacrificing our intentions, then the more effective and fruitful will be our efforts. Saint Margaret Mary was a great saint. People admire greatness, and I believe that they will love our saint once they come to know and understand her better. We should do our utmost to present her to the modern world, using our talents in every way to keep her image, her life, and her message before us and before others as well.
For more information about the Order of the Visitation of Holy Mary, go to visitationspirit.org.